It's time for Valley Edition, a weekly panel discussion on current issues in the Mat-Su Valley, moderated by Mike Malevsky.
Well, folks, once again, it's time for another edition of Valley Edition. And I'm happy to report that we have Mark Kelsey, Terry Snyder, Philip Manning, and Zaz Hollander all contributing to this edition. Let's start with Philip. Well, Philip Manning, you chose to go out on the Willow Lake surface and spend an afternoon, and it was a very interesting beginning to a dog mushing race. Would you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure, yeah. And no, we were out there. I was out there as well as Katie Ryder, a reporter here for us at KTNA. And what they do for the Willow 300 is a mass start. So if you've been to, you know, the Iditarod restart, which happens at the same place, they have a shoot and one team goes out at a time and there's 2 minutes in between. Not for this race. What they did for this race is they lined up all, I think the final number was 35, lined up all 35 teams along the side of the lake, and the race marshal, who was Bernhalter this year, goes out, drops a red flag, and all the teams are free to go. And probably two-thirds of the teams went off immediately, and it was pretty crazy to see that many dog teams go, and it was very, very loud. But it seemed to go off pretty much without a hitch. There were no tangles, nothing like that I suspected could happen in a scenario like that, but it was visually very striking.
So I'm impressed with that kind of start. This is very different than the Iditarod start or any of the other races that I am familiar with. And they didn't have any trouble with that. Is that correct?
Didn't seem to. No, everything seemed to go pretty smoothly.
Okay. And I know we're recording this on Friday, and the finish will happen, as I understand, probably sometime Saturday. Is that also?
Correct. Yep.
Okay. Okay.
They're expecting the first teams to come in the early afternoon on Saturday at Sheep Creek Lodge, which is the finish line.
Okay, very good. Now, there are other topics of interest, as I understand, in Talkeetna, and upcoming on the next borough assembly meeting on the 6th, I believe, this coming week, we're going to be seeing a discussion of taxes. And this has implications for what was passed some time ago relative to the treatment plant in Talkeetna. Talk a little bit about that.
Sure. So Talkeetna, people who live within the Talkeetna Sewer and Water District voted in October to institute a sales tax to help pay for the system, which has been running in the red for years and has had significant operational issues as well. And so the tax went in, and what's being discussed at the next assembly meeting is putting a maximum transaction cap on that tax of $1,000. Initially, local folks had advocated for that to be taken out because there was concern that, say, you know, one of your big tour companies they're going to buy 50 flight seeing tickets. Well, if they buy those all at once, do they get by on only paying for the first $1,000 worth of transaction there, or do they pay, you know, what would actually be closer to $25,000 worth of tax? So that got taken out, and then what happened was it came to light that there were significantly more businesses in the district that have large ticket transactions that weren't considered, and that just it didn't come up in the initial conversation. You know, mountain guiding services,
right?
Airplane mechanics, fuel deliveries, that sort of fuel deliveries for air services. Where they're buying, you know, 1,000 gallons at a time, that sort of deal. And so that's what's being proposed. And I don't foresee any difficulty getting that in because it basically just brings it back in line with what Wasilla has. One thing that people do still want here, and it remains to be seen whether the assembly will act on it, is exempting utilities. Because right now you pay for, if you live within the district, which I do, you pay for tax on having your heating oil delivered, on your electric bill, and somewhat ironically, on your water bill.
Ah, okay. All right. So that session that'll be coming up at the Borough Assembly will be, I think, a topic of some interest for residents. Do you expect that there'll be anyone traveling down to testify, or is it pretty much rolling in the direction that many people feel is the right one?
You know, it's always hard to tell. I think if people do show up to testify, it might be frustration over other issues with regard to the sales tax, because there were some folks who were very much not in favor of it, many of them business owners. But as far as putting the cat back in, there seems to be a fair amount of consensus around here on that, at least from what I've seen.
Okay. The two other topics that I wanted to check with in particular, since you have your ear to the ground there, given that there has been some interesting pushback and issues associated with marijuana in other parts of the state, what's the state of the marijuana distribution in Talkeetna?
Obviously the slower season up here in the wintertime.
Right.
But as far as I'm aware, the High Expedition is still open at least part of the week and still doing business and ticking along. The partnership that runs that is looking at opening a manufacturing facility outside of town at what we call the Y, the
right.
Junction of the Spur Road and the Parks Highway, about a mile in from that. And that's hitting some regulatory speed bumps, but presumably that might be coming online later this year as well.
Okay. And then the next topic has to do with the upcoming election. I know that Assemblyman Kowalki has filed and looks like he's looking to move to the legislature. Do you have any indications at all that he's going to have particular competition?
You know, I don't know. And in checking with the Division of Elections earlier, he's the only name down right now. Of course, there is still some time. The primary isn't until the summer. So it's entirely possible somebody else steps in and enters that race as well. Notably, whoever ends up being chosen to replace Senator Dunleavy, since he's resigned at the beginning of the session.
Right, right. Okay. Well, the other topic that has received considerable attention has to do with another legislator, in this case David Wilson, a little bit further down the Parks Highway. And he has run afoul of... Well, saying perhaps certain things in a press conference that caused people to say, well, you've crossed the line there. Have you had any of your own experiences with legislators or others that or are other individuals who have been harassed in this present climate of very sensitive reactions to any intimations of harassment?
Not in a work capacity, not as far as covering a story, but I have spoken with people who have dealt with some of that in other situations, and it's a very tricky time for journalists. I think when you're looking at cases like this and making sure that you're being fair to everyone, because like you said, there is a tendency to want to react very strongly and with good reason. But we, in our profession, have to be very careful about what we report, how, and when. Now, in this case, you're talking about this is a press conference.
Right.
So that's obviously out there public information.
Sure.
But, yeah.
Well, then the last topic has to do with a letter that was recently prepared and sent by both two signatures, the mayor of the borough and the borough's manager, regarding Mr. Haberman, and in particular an incident that occurred in Talkeetna back on January 12th at the Talkeetna Library. Any comments about that?
So for anybody who follows municipal meetings in the borough probably knows who Eugene Carl Haberman is. He comes and raises issues with various governing bodies. But in this case, he did show up at the meeting. He did speak on procedural things, the sort of thing he normally does. The incident that's really highlighted in the letter has to do with a confrontation with one of the librarians there that occurred outside of the meeting. And I didn't see that. Apparently he was talking on his cell phone in the library loudly and was asked to go and there was some resistance there. And the borough has, this is at least the second letter they've sent him basically to the same tune of, everybody has the right to free speech, but there's also expectations of decorum and behavior that have to be observed.
Okay. So I'm wondering if you have been at other meetings, and you've done this for a while, and noticed any kind of gradual change in the way people behave? Or is this episodic in the sense that you have a fiery enough issue, people come out, and then normally they're pretty polite and talking? And
I think it's the former. I think most of the time, yeah, people are, you know, generally pretty polite and then observing of, you know, Robert's rules or whatever the case may be at meetings. But anytime you have something that's contentious, you will definitely get folks out who will be very passionate. And I will say, in this area, in Talkeetna Community Council meetings are known for their deep discussions on a lot of issues. But even when it is heated, most of the time people stay pretty respectful of each other. Now, whether or not maybe it's changing a little bit as politics in general has gotten a little bit more contentious, I'll say, in the last year or two. But I think for the most part, people are very good about behaving themselves.
Okay. Well, thank you, Philip Manning from Talkeetna and KTNA up there, for sharing some observations about what's happening. And I hope you have a good day and you stay warm and don't have to spend a lot of time, unless you really choose to, out on a cold lake.
You're right. Well, I'll be out there at the finish line tomorrow. So, yeah, thanks for having me, Mike. It's always a pleasure to be part of the show.
Okay. Take care now. It's my great pleasure to have Zaz Hollander here to talk about a couple of things that she's been following recently. I understand that there's been an issue of some money that has been, I don't know what best to describe it, has gone into the wrong place.
Allegedly gone into the wrong place, at least this time. There's a gentleman from the Meadow Lakes area. He also has connections in North Pole. His name is Charles Yingst, and he was indicted last week by a Palmer grand jury on felony fraud and theft charges linked to, at this point, at least 17 victims, although a few more have come forward, and $340,000 in losses. And I talked with a few of the victims, and it sounds like Mr. Yingst is a really capable mechanic, and that's no lie. And so he's also quite charming, and so he ingratiates himself with people by doing good work, and then takes it a few steps further and asks for loans or offers to find them equipment down south, and the loans aren't paid back and the equipment doesn't materialize, or he's been known to work on vehicles and then sell them or part them out and sell the parts, motors. And this is all from court documents, victim interviews. But he also was convicted twice before on exactly the same charges in very similar situations, in Fairbanks in 2006 and Palmer 2011. A group of victims, same similar scenarios, you know, tens of thousands of dollars lost. And so his victims this time around are wondering how it is he's back out.
Right.
And complaints about him started last summer and weren't really taken seriously for a few months. And so there was kind of a gap in which some victims say that maybe more victims were victimized because the troopers didn't start their investigation until late October after the state ombudsman's office got involved, but were first informed about the situation in August. And Mr. Yingst's probation officer started fielding calls from victims before that. But at that point, I would imagine it was sort of unclear. Well, if you're having a problem, maybe call the troopers. And when people called the troopers, they were told it sounds like a civil matter, at least a couple times.
Okay.
And so it wasn't until late October that Trooper Darren Cooper started investigating, and the name Yingst was familiar to him. And so he put together a case that then went to prosecutors and was told went to grand jury just a few weeks after that. So, you know, once he started investigating, things started coming together.
Well, this sounds like this story will continue on, because there would be some activity in courts after.
Yeah, and this at this point is only an indictment. He hasn't been charged or found. Well, he hasn't charged through indictment, but he hasn't been found guilty of anything. His public defender didn't return my calls, and his wife didn't want to talk with me. So this is, you know, other people saying really damning things about Charles Yingst, but with no response from him.
Okay.
It is a very similar MO to the other cases in which he was found guilty or pled out and was convicted.
Okay, and this sounds like it involves a rather large sum of money or sums of money over time.
Yeah, at least $340,000.
Okay.
And people are saying that, you know, they may have lost a $45,000 loan, but then also lost vehicles or making payment on vehicles, and that their total loss would actually be higher. And they don't expect to get a lot back in restitution, at least at this stage. So at least one business went under because of the owner's trust in Mr. Yingst.
Okay. Well, thank you for following this. I suspect we'll be hearing more as time goes on, and I know you're busy doing other stuff. So once again, Zaz Hollander, thank you for contributing.
Thanks a lot, Mike. Everybody have a good week.
Yep, bye-bye. Well, Terry Snyder, you have observed Mr. Haberman, Eugene Carl Haberman, over a considerable time. We've just heard Philip Manning talk a little bit about his experience in Talkeetna at a recent event. What's your sense about Mr. Haberman, his purpose, his effect on what happens at all the meetings he attends?
Gee, I don't know. You know, Mike, he has been a person who has gone to these meetings from the public for a few years now. That's not unusual that some people, put their kind of beat on the assembly and start participating. I'm not sure what his purpose is. His purpose seems to be transparency, but I think another purpose seems to be a little bit of general agitation. And the borough, I think, has so far been fairly tolerant with all of it. There certainly is a place for people to continuously to push for transparency and accountability. But at this point, it would seem that he can, and I've witnessed him myself, be pretty threatening to people. And, we're in a very sensitive time right now. And I think that the borough has done gone out of their way to try to accommodate him. And it sounds like Talkeetna pushed the button a little once again. And for good reason. The borough should be quite ready to protect their employees from any type of a threat. And I think they took the steps to do that.
Okay. And my understanding, having read the letter that was sent, that they were just giving him good feedback, saying this is what was described as happening, a number of observers, and we're saying that we don't want that. We'd like you to be more respectful, and that we certainly are open to having people attend meetings. There are, however, lines that can be crossed. So, and this was.
And I think if you look at what did happen at the legislature right now, part of the problem has been the failure of government to take these threats seriously and these actions of people seriously. Whether it's from the public or internally, I don't think there is any patience right now for people not acting on any type of threat or disruption.
Right. Well, speaking of the legislature has had a number of bills that have been pre-filed, and one of them that is particularly interesting to me is the one, I think, that came out of Gary Stevens' office saying, let's take care of this educational funding by April 1st. Well, what kind of chance do you think that would happen that sort of get the legislative into the mode of passing some of the important bills?
Well, you know, it's an election year, Mike, and it may get some attention. It's certainly getting a vetting. I think that I've listened to a couple of hearings on it. I think the districts, of course, are fully behind it. They would like the ability to not be so far down on the food chain when it comes to funding. Last year was an extraordinarily hard year for them, with the budget just being batted down as far down the road as it could be. And I think this goes, it's a thoughtful bill that Senator Stevens has put out that I think he'll garner some support, whether he'll get enough and there's enough time with the push for the 90-day session to get it through both bodies will be a little bit of a push. And this is the last year of the two-year legislative session, so they'd have to start all over with it. Of course, the better legislation would be to forward fund, to have a promise to forward fund and give the districts really the ability to plan by knowing a year in advance what their funding is going to be instead of really after their budget has to be presented. Because with this, I think they'll be rubbing up even against a timeline with the borough to have their budget complete. In fact, their presentations, the way it is right now, start to the public now, next week, I think. They start rolling out their proposed budget. They're not done, but they have their own process they have to follow. So I think it's a step in the right direction. I hope that they give it consideration. I think more needs to be done in the interest of both the state and the districts in this long kabuki dance to get education funding sealed up every year.
Okay. Well, thank you, Terry, for talking a little bit about a couple of these topics that are of interest to people. So, Mark Kelsey, we've been talking about issues associated with what a person says, for example, in a press conference, and also talking and interfering with people. I'm curious, given your experience, what's your sense of the situation at the present time? In other words, is it that we are really seeing people being either more sensitive to what is said, whether it's in a press conference or to a reporter or in a public meeting? Has that been gradually or even rapidly changing to the point where people are really having a problem with anything that is said anywhere?
Wow. Boy, I certainly hope that we're not that far out on the edge yet. There's certainly, with some topics, for example, all the momentum now behind the Me Too movement and the Time's Up, there's big conversation that needs to be had there. And certainly with that topic, it's a minefield. You got to be very careful what you say, how you say it, who you say it to. And some of this is understandable. Maybe all of it is understandable, but it doesn't change that we need to get past this. We need to have this conversation. We need to find a way to talk about these things and get to a place where everybody's on the same page.
Okay, and by saying on the same page, you're really saying with some understanding of decorum or where you can certainly press and ask questions, but that there's, in both directions, there seems to be an interesting question about just how much in your face can a reporter be, or alternatively, how much just saying no a person who's a public figure can do.
Well, that's a whole other topic, and certainly it's fair game now. We see a lot of that going on. When I hear, as a person who spent a lot of time in journalism, when I hear a question like, how much in your face can a reporter get, or how hard can a reporter press, I want to flip it back and say, well, how open is the person being asked being? We see a lot now. You see it all the time, especially on cable news. An elected person gets asked a question and does backflips to avoid answering that question. So in a case like that, I think a little bit of honesty on the part of the person being interviewed, you know, a direct answer, I'm not going to answer that, I can't answer that because, is a whole lot more honest and more productive than dancing around it and forcing a reporter to keep asking and rephrasing the same question. So I think it goes both ways. There's responsibility both ways, and a clear no from someone being interviewed, or a not now, or a clear answer, I think would go a long way toward combating a lot of that more aggressive interviewing style.
So, and now, so far we've been talking a little bit about professional journalists, and now we are seeing people who are citizens, and perhaps they might do a little blogging, or they might do a little, or a lot of attending at meetings, and they very often come in not with the same kind of reportorial background, but come in saying, I'm concerned, I have a problem with what's happening here. In fact, something of a negative attitude. And that seems to be happening a bit more in my observation as well.
Yeah, and that's part of, I think, a general deterioration of civility in general, I think as a whole, we all need to sort of take a deep breath and think about how we want people to talk to us. It really, in a lot of ways, we are going off the deep end there. I think this backlash to political correctness or perceived political correctness has a lot to do with it. I mean, there's a difference between, you know, outspokenly speaking your mind and being politically correct. You don't need one. One does not have to replace the other. Rudeness does not have to replace being politically correct. We need to find a middle ground, a reasonable middle ground, because we need to have conversations and we need to be able to talk to each other much better than we're doing now.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mark Kelsey, for comments about what many people are observing in meetings and places, the difficulties that seem to happen about just having conversations.
It really is.
Well, it looks like we have come to the end of another edition of Valley Edition. And I want to thank the participants, Mark Kelsey and Terry Snyder, Zaz Hollander, and Philip Manning, for all contributing to this edition of Valley Edition. We'll be back next week.
You've been listening to Valley Edition, a weekly panel discussion on current issues in the Matsu Valley, moderated by Mike Malevsky. Valley Edition is a production of Radio Free Palmer, recorded at our studios in Palmer, Alaska. The views and opinions of hosts or guests do not necessarily represent those of Radio Free Palmer, this station, or its underwriters. If you have any comments or questions about this program, email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.